I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Welcome to Unhappy Hour, the show where we bitch about all the things we love to hate every single week. I'm your host, Matt Bellassai. By the way, if you want to see me perform live, I will be at the Aspen Comedy Festival coming up this September, September 20th. It's a Thursday. I'll be at the Wheeler Opera House. You can buy tickets now. Go to mattbellassai.com/tour or Google it. But for now, I'm in the studio, as always, with my producer, Barry Finkel. Hi, Barry.
Hey, Matt.
Are you ready?
For what?
A show.
Yeah.
We're doing a podcast right now.
I'm right here.
I don't know
I'm
if
ready.
You know. We're in a fucking studio
Are
with
you
microphones.
Ready?
Yes. I had a big breakfast.
Oh, good.
I had an egg sandwich and a fruit salad and 3 donuts. And on that note, we're going to start off, as we always do, with worst things first, where I highlight the worst news of the week. Then we are diving deep into a deeply personal and politically fraught topic. It is a topic that consumes me, yet also one that I consume. We're talking about dessert, because there are ways to fuck up the necessary perfection that is dessert, and I am here to right your wrongs. After that, we got Mara Wilson in the studio. She was, of course, the star of Mrs. Doubtfire, Miracle on 34th Street, and frickin' Matilda, true 90s royalty. And she continues her royal reign as a writer and now featured guest complainer. We've got all that and more, so let's get into it. Let's do it. Let's start the show. All right, worst things first. Let's get through the worst news of the week. First, we got a doozy starting off.
Oh, boy.
It's a little grim. A bunch of cats are turning up dead.
Where?
All over Washington State. And authorities are starting to suspect that it is a single serial cat killer responsible for all of them. Yeah. I don't know why I'm laughing, because this is grim as fuck. This is the beginning of a movie where, like, a little girl gets possessed by the devil and murders her entire family.
Yes.
Everyone's like, I don't know why the cats are all dead. And this little girl has, like, a paring knife under her pillow. The 13th cat, see? This is already fucked up. Mm-hmm. Already fucked up. The 13th cat was found dead last week in Thurston County near Olympia, Washington. Most of the cats were found in public places and did not appear to have been killed by wild animals. They're also all, like, dismembered.
Oh.
This is some HBO miniseries shit. All right, I just watched Sharp Objects on HBO, and I'm terrified of everyone and everything. Trust no one. But this isn't the only cat murderer lurking around. This is such an upsetting sequence. In South London, apparently, there's a suspect dubbed the Croydon Cat Ripper. Get it? like Jack the Ripper, is thought to be responsible for as many as 500 murdered cats over the past 3 years.
Are these stray cats or like domesticated cats?
Well, at least the one in Washington, they're like domesticated cats.
Oh, that's fucked up.
I mean, it's pretty fucked up either way. Kill the homeless cats. That's fine. Yeah, no, it's like people who let their cats outside and then he steals or she kills them. Obviously fucked up, even though I hate cats and they deserve it. So they don't deserve to be mass murdered. Next! This is an update on an earlier story from a few weeks ago. Remember, there were a bunch of goats who escaped a New Jersey.
Fred, set them free.
Yeah, he was. The rumor was that a hero goat named Fred was the one who sprang them all out. Well, Fred has been captured.
Oh, no.
And even though I guess it was mostly a joke that Fred actually set them free, the auction house manager has given interviews to be like, Fred did it. He's framing Fred for his fuck up. And now nobody knows what's going to happen to Fred. Police apparently got help from locals to catch Fred. So some of you motherfuckers fucking ratted on Fred. I hope you're enjoying your shitty life. You had nothing better to do than to turn in a goat who was trying to do good in this world and set those goats free. Justice for Fred. I believe in Fred. If he escaped once, he can escape again. We just have to believe. Next! A shopping plaza in Toronto is about to become home to a place that advertises itself as the first ever sex doll brothel in North America.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. What does that mean?
Just use your imagination. Or here's the description. It's called Aura Dolls, promises to bring an exciting new way for patrons to achieve their needs, quote, without the many restrictions and limitations that a real partner may come with. Oh, fucking... Are you tired of real people? Fuck a toy. I mean, that's a thing.
That is a thing.
But like, fuck a doll. I don't know. It's in a shopping mall and you go there and I guess according to their website, there's no human staff in the brothel section.
Which is an incredibly upsetting
sentence. Customers just put payment on the counter and then go straight into a room and then smash Barbie until she's ruined.
But who cleans her? It can't be like at a gym where you'd like are supposed to wipe down the equipment after you're done. Like, that's not a good system.
Just towel her off when you're done, or him. And be on your way. And then the next person comes in. It's like a cast iron skillet.
Mm.
You don't really wash it. It just gets seasoned.
The seasoning.
The more people use it.
Right.
I hate
everything that we just said is horrible.
Customers will be charged anywhere from $60 to $742. What an insane spectrum. What is the difference between those two price points? What does $700 get you that $60 doesn't?
One is like a Barbie.
I'm just imagining like a motel bed that you put quarters in and it starts shaking. But a doll. And finally, this is one of my favorite stories, even though it's insane. A former Olympic swimmer. He's a 2-time gold medalist. His name is Cleet Keller.
Wow.
Which is not a real name.
Nope.
He used an app called Wag
to
find a dog sitter for his dog Jimbo at his home in Colorado Springs. So he gets a dog sitter. He goes out. It's a Sunday night. Comes back home 1 a.m. on Monday and finds two shirtless men sitting on his couch with an open bottle of lube and a camcorder. So I signed up for Wag. And well, the fucked up thing was, The dog sitter was a woman and she wasn't there. And he was like, where the fuck is my dog sitter? Who are you? Turns out she was in the bathroom taking a shower. When she got out of the shower, this was the excuse that she gave. She says, to be completely honest, I didn't have WD-40 and my keys were stuck in my car. So I ended up grabbing what I had in my car for things that, you know, I do on my personal time. And I didn't think to put it back in my car. What?
How do the two men come into that then?
I don't know if she means like she needed WD-40 for something.
So instead she just used lube.
That she happened to have in her car. Because I carry lube around with me everywhere
constantly.
Just in case.
Yeah, you never know.
Just in my car, in the glove compartment. I honestly cannot make any sense of this explanation. She was like, she needed WD-40 for something and instead used personal lube, and also two shirtless men in a camcorder were there. Cleet said, it was just a total mess and I can only imagine what poor Jimbo saw in there. I think the subtext of almost everything is don't shoot a porn in my house that's not yours. Although I assume that that's like 90% of Airbnb's business.
Right.
Like every Airbnb that we've stayed at in LA has definitely been the site of at least like one porn. And that's it for Worst Things First. Next up, we are jumping headfirst into a pool of bread pudding. We're cannonballing into an ice cream sundae. We are diving deep into desserts.
Pecan pie. Macadamia nut. Apples. Maraschino cherries.
Deep dive, deep dive, deep dive, deep dive, deep dive. Deep dive.
Deep dive.
Deep dive. Deep dive. Deep dive. All right. Well, as everybody who listens to the podcast knows, I have been watching an absurd amount of the Great British Bake Off. And obviously, I am now an expert on all baked goods and desserts. Breads, brownies, bagels, donuts, all of it. I've also baked 3 things in the past month. So
that's a lot. That's almost one a week.
I don't want to brag, but I made a banana bread and chocolate chip cookies and a disgusting citrus olive oil cake that I nonetheless ate all of. I'm also just very passionate about dessert. I believe it is a sacred part of every meal. We were in LA a few weeks ago and we ate at a nice restaurant and then we ordered dessert and the waitress was like a bitch about it.
She's like, oh my God, no one's ordered dessert here in like weeks.
Just like, because your city is garbage doesn't mean I'm not allowed to use my God-given right to order dessert. And I was affronted. You're a restaurant. What else are you for? Everything, every other part of the meal is just a prelude to your desserts.
Amen.
Also, people were very passionate a couple weeks ago about my stance on macadamia nut cookies, which I stand by, okay? Macadamia nut cookies are an abomination because you see it and you're like, oh, it's chocolate chip cookies with white chocolate. I guess that's fine. I guess I can live with that. And then you bite into it, bam, disappointment. I don't like food that is intended to try to trick me into thinking it's something else. Do not dupe me. I will not be duped. So I want to go through some other dessert faux pas and disasters. These are all of my strong opinions on all things sweet. First, let's just start off with the broadest possible statement. Fruit has no place in dessert.
Amen. None.
If there's fruit in it at all, it's not dessert. It's breakfast.
Amen.
Legally.
Legally.
Legally, you can get away with eating it for breakfast. No jams, jellies, jello, sauces, suckers. I don't want any of it. If it has fruit in it, it's disgusting. Strawberries, blueberries, apricots, oranges, lemons, none of it. I'll just
list. Well, lemons, I thought lemons we are accepting.
Yeah, I'll take a lemon, I guess. A lemon poppy seed.
Because lemon, when it's in something, is not in there as fruit. It's in there more as like a spice or a flavor profile rather than just like a like punch of fruit. You know what I mean?
You're also not just eating a lemon ever.
Right, that's what I mean. Yeah.
Right, right.
It's the juice of it.
It's the flavor.
Yes.
Next! Desserts that are too showy. Desserts that are trying to show off.
Mm-mm.
And impress me. No, just taste good.
24 karat gold leaf or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't want it on my ice cream. I want it on my fingers.
Also, desserts that come to the table and they're like on fire.
It's a danger.
It scares me.
It does.
What if it's still on fire when it goes down my throat?
Then you're a flamethrower all of a sudden. I didn't sign up for that. I didn't go to clown school.
I'm not a dragon. Also, desserts that you have to like do work on when it gets to you. There's that like very trendy dessert where you have things encased in like a chocolate dome, and then you pour hot chocolate on top of it and it like melts
right.
it.
Yes.
I don't need a reveal.
No.
Okay. I'm not looking at like a extreme home makeover where we have to move a fucking bus for me to see the dessert I'm about to eat. Just give me the cake and let me be free. They do this a lot on Great British Bake Off because the end of every episode, they have to make a showstopper, which is like the dessert that you would have as like a centerpiece mm-hmm. on a table. So you want to make it look really good. But desserts that look, that you put a lot of effort into like making look really good often taste like garbage.
Yeah.
Because it's like all of that elaborate icing that you don't want to eat.
Right. Dessert is about taste more than anything.
Also, just most cake frostings in general are like overwhelmingly disgusting.
I'm going to go ahead and say, not a huge fan of cake, but especially the
Fuck
frosting.
You.
I'm sorry.
Cake is good. Frosting is bad. Cake is better than pie.
Whoa, hard disagree.
I am team cake.
I'm team pie.
Pie is mostly repulsive.
See, if we're talking about flavor, though, I almost always would prefer a flavor of a pie than the flavor of cake.
No.
Yes. But that being said, I don't like fruit pies because we've already discussed.
What's left?
Chocolate pies and nut pies like pecan pie.
Yeah.
I like that.
Fine. I'll allow that. My thing is, I don't like pie crust. I think pie
That's
crust
the
is
best
like,
part.
It usually is like sandy. It's like a desert.
Are you talking about like a graham cracker pie crust?
Graham cracker crust is better, but most like kind of pastry pie crusts are just dry and gross. And all I want is the filling. But most often it's like fruity and disgusting. Pumpkin pie is the only acceptable pie.
See, I like pumpkin pie.
And even then, that's pushing it.
It is pushing it.
Next, strawberry milkshakes. If you choose any flavor milkshake that isn't vanilla or chocolate, you're a monster.
I like adding things in with vanilla or chocolate, but never, once again, fruit. Why would I want fruit in my milkshake?
We're not making smoothies. We're making milkshakes.
I'm going to go ahead and say anything strawberry flavored is disgusting. And I love strawberries.
Also, malt? What the fuck is malt? Nobody really knows what malt is.
I have no idea.
That's what Whoppers are made out of. And I think Whoppers are repulsive.
Amen.
It just tastes like a sweet dirt.
Yeah.
It's a very dry chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
My like low-key elitist opinion is that most chocolate is horrible because it's like Hershey's.
Not real. That's yeah. It's not actual chocolate.
Right. But that is like the most mainstream chocolate. Next! I feel like I've been on the record about this before. Chocolate and peanut butter together, I'm not a huge fan. I get it. On my list of grievances, it's not high, but I wouldn't seek it out.
It is my favorite combination.
I think peanut butter dries out most things if it's not made properly. And so you get like a nice moist chocolate bit and then just a dry, chalky peanut butter bit.
I get that. But peanut butter can be so creamy and delicious and like almost, you know, smooth.
Yeah, that's the definition of peanut butter. I don't disagree with what peanut butter is.
I love it. I love that combination.
Moving on. Carrot cake is good. Zucchini bread is bad. I have always loved carrot cake. We used to go to Old Country Buffet before we got kicked out.
Right.
And I won't repeat that whole story here. Those of you who know it, know it. And they always had carrot cakes that they would serve in like little bowls.
Ooh.
And I always loved it. And they painted a little carrot on top. But then I started getting introduced to other vegetable-based cakes and breads. And I was like, fuck you. I don't have time for a green-based food. Any green-based food, really. I don't. People always defend it by being like, it makes it so moist. I don't care how wet of a bread I get from putting a fucking zucchini in it. I'm not going to dip a cucumber into this bread just to make you happy. Next, any frozen dessert that isn't ice cream is horrible. Only maybe gelato, because that's just like ice cream with extra ice cream smashed into it, basically. Mm-hmm. Custard, not into it.
Mm-mm.
That's just eggy ice cream.
Yeah.
Frozen yogurt, I'm not like, I'll eat it, but I won't be happy about it.
But it should not be considered ice cream.
No. Well, I don't think anyone does.
I mean, people will like do it as a substitute, and that's not okay.
I think of frozen yogurt as something you eat before the meal, and then ice cream after the meal.
It gets your palate ready.
S'mores. S'mores are, I've never met anybody who has made a perfect s'more. It's impossible. It's an impossible task because you set the fucking marshmallow on fire and then it's like you have to fucking wrangle it. You have to wrangle the flaming marshmallow onto a wedge of graham cracker that you've had to like pickaxe apart. And it's never a perfect square. It's always a jagged piece of graham cracker and then a jagged piece of chocolate. And then you put the marshmallow on, or marshmallow, as they say in London. And then you bite into it, and it's like you're biting into fucking the Pillsbury Doughboy's hot semen, because the inside of the marshmallow just bursts out. And God forbid you get any of it on your skin, because that shit won't come off ever. I have marshmallow stains on my face that have been there for 10 years from the last time I tried to make s'mores. Also, it's disgusting to put a marshmallow on a stick that you found outside. What am I, a fucking dog? I'm not going to put a stick in my mouth. And finally, maraschino cherries are repulsive. They are the devil's cherry. I cannot believe that we accepted that as a Sunday finisher for millennia. We just accepted that you can put a stop sign red cherry on top of it. Just slathered in like the grossest syrup you could possibly imagine.
What are they? Are they real cherries?
I think it's a real cherry that's been like just like finger blasted with sugar. Well, let's look it up. Maraschino cherry is a preserved sweetened cherry typically made from light colored sweet cherries. In their modern form, they're preserved in a brine solution, usually containing sulfur dioxide.
What?
To bleach them, and then they're soaked in food coloring, sugar syrup.
Good.
It's just, fuck, it's so gross. Also, you put it in like a Shirley Temple. It's the way of dressing up stuff that doesn't need, there are so many better dressings.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, I'd rather you literally put like a scarf around it than put a maraschino cherry on top of it. And on that note, I am done with maraschino cherries. I am done with all of your shitty dessert opinions. I am done with all of it. Give me a nice slice of chocolate cake, maybe with a little bit of ganache in the center. A little bit of ice cream on the side. Heat that shit up, 350 degrees. Perfect. Perfection. And that's it for this week's Deep Dive. Next up, we're moving to the dessert of this episode, an interview with Mara Wilson, coming right up after this commercial break. Today's episode is brought to you by Daily Harvest. When you're me, just living your life like the title credits of Sex and the City, just fashionably getting in and out of taxis and running in stilettos from one meeting to the next before sitting down to judge all of my friends and call it writing. I mean, sometimes I'm just so busy, I can't help but wonder, did I even eat lunch? No, I don't have to ask that question. I've got Daily Harvest. Daily Harvest delivers perfectly portioned cups of frozen organic fruits and vegetables directly to your door. It gives me healthy fuel fast. All you have to do is add water or your fave milk to your cup, blend it up, or throw that bad boy into the microwave and enjoy. They've got savory harvest bowls. They've got dessert-inspired plant-based protein smoothies. They've even got soups! I never thought I could make soup, but blending up the chilled avocado cucumber soup totally counts, and it is delicious! And you can be a soup star, too! Just go to daily-harvest.com and enter promo code UNHAPPY to get 3 cups free in your first box. That's promo code UNHAPPY for 3 free Daily Harvest cups at daily-harvest.com. Daily-harvest.com. Today's episode is also brought to you by the Andy Daly Podcast Pilot Project. Earwolf fans have been asking for more episodes of the Andy Daly Podcast Pilot Project for years. And now he's back with a new batch of pilots. Season 2 is out right now. So what is the Andy Daly Podcast Pilot Project? Well, people often send fully produced pilots to the podcast company Earwolf in hopes of getting picked up by the network. Andy Daly and his co-host Matt Gourley sifted through those pilots and picked the best ones to air on their show. But none of those pilots were picked up because none of those pilots really exist. Each episode is actually loosely scripted improv centered on one of Andy's characters, aka each episode is hilarious. This show is as close as podcasts get to sketch comedy, so check it out. Subscribe to the Andy Daly Podcast Pilot Project in Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen, and you'll get a new pilot every Thursday. My guest complainer today is Mara Wilson. Mara is a writer, playwright, performer, author of the book Where Am I Now? True Stories of Girlhood and Accidental Fame. You may know her from her childhood roles in Matilda, Mrs. Doubtfire, etc. And now you can get her writing right in your inbox with her weekly newsletter on Substack. Mara Wilson, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for coming. So we like to get our complaining juices going asking everybody, what is one thing you hate that everybody else loves?
I'm embarrassed already to say this, but I don't like sad music.
Yeah.
I don't like or overly sad music. Like, I think she's an amazing person and a very talented person, but I cannot stand Adele's music. Cannot stand it. I don't want to be in the same room when it's playing. Yeah. I don't think that just because you like sad music, you are deep and emotional. I mean, I feel like I can get depressed all by myself.
Right.
I already cry at like This American Life and Pixar movies, you know? I don't need it. And it's just like nails on a chalkboard for me to feel, to be like inundated with too much over the top emotion. It doesn't feel comfortable to me. I think music, sad music. And slow music too. Like I'm sorry, I don't care like what a brilliant lyricist he is. I think Sufjan Stevens is really boring. I know that I have like a bad taste in music, you know, probably. I like poppy music. I mean, I can listen to sad music if it's in the context of a musical.
Right, right.
If it's serving a greater purpose that way.
Uh-huh.
And I am a big musical theater nerd. So that is something that I know a lot of. But just
do you have
like,
a favorite sad musical song?
Oh, let's see. Favorite sad musical songs. I love Being Alive from Company.
Right.
I love, anything from Cabaret, which is, I mean, it's about World War II. It's about the Nazis. Of course, it's sad.
Yeah.
Unworthy of Your Love from Assassins is super creepy, and I love it.
Uh-huh.
You know, I love these like messed up love ballads.
Right.
I love them. But
my go-to is always On My Own from
Les
Mis.
Yes, I love that one too.
Because it's just the perfect, like, he won't love me back. I might as well die.
Yeah, exactly. Just it's very overwrought 15-year-old kind of thing.
Right.
And I like that, but like, I remember I used to have like a roommate who would play Coldplay and I would get really depressed listening to it.
Yeah.
Sad, slow music. I can feel like my blood pressure dropping.
I always feel that way when I'm like getting in the shower. And now I have this whole routine where I have to like pick a song that I'm going to like play on the little shower speaker.
I play Beyonce's Countdown a lot while I'm in the shower.
Yeah.
Which keeps me like going really quickly.
Right.
You know, you spend like 5 minutes in the shower and or you could try to spend 5 minutes in the shower and you'll get out and it'll be like an hour. Right. Yeah, you'll think that it will be 5 minutes.
You've
but
made
you've
it through
actually,
all of four.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
All of BJ. Yeah. I'm always like, I want to pick a song that I can sing along to, mm-hmm. but I want like an upbeat song.
Yeah.
Like the ballads, that's all. I like singing a ballad in the shower.
Yeah, it's fun
but
to
then
sing.
Then it's like a sad song and then it's just like,
yeah.
I don't want to be like sad in the morning.
Yeah,
I want
exactly.
a pick me up song that I can also sing along to.
Lately, I've been listening to ABBA in the shower.
Yes.
And I haven't even seen Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again. So, you know, I don't know what my deal is. But,
right. I was just watching it on,
yeah?
the first Mamma Mia on Netflix.
I like upbeat music.
You, I think, sent in a couple of things. Sarcasm was another one.
I hate
one.
Sarcasm. I don't like sarcasm. Just say what you mean. You're not funny for saying that you don't see. This is the thing that bothers me is I don't know if I'm a gullible person, but I do sort of, I think that I'm kind of always questioning the world around me and I never know anything for sure. And I like to hear other people's. So people will say something. I'll say like, somebody will say like, oh yeah, that was a great movie. And I'll be like, really? You thought that was a good movie? I didn't think it was very good at all. And they'll be like, well, of course not. I'm being sarcastic. And I want to be like, I'm sorry that I can conceive of a world in which we have different opinions, or I'm sorry that I can conceive of a world in which, you know, you say something and you mean it. I think that I hate sarcasm because I feel like so many people think that it makes them funny and it doesn't.
Yeah.
It's not intelligent. It's not, you know, and sometimes you're not being funny. You're just being mean.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that snark, I feel like snark is like salt. Like it's something that it's great, but like, you're probably not Dorothy Parker,
yeah.
you know, you're probably not. Like if I see fluent in sarcasm on a Twitter bio one more time, I don't know. The thing is I am almost pathetically, you know, pathologically sincere.
Yeah.
I can't be anything other than myself. I've learned to lie, but it took me a very long time. and that is the thing. And it bothers me when people are doing this and sarcasm. I think it's like cynicism. I think that everybody has cynicism to a certain extent, and that's like a defense. But
if
you're like a really cynical person, that's like somebody that's like being, they're covered in calluses, you know, that it's protecting something, you know, or like covered in blisters or something, covering what's been rubbed raw. It's
right,
not,
right.
Which is not a good look, literally or figuratively.
Yeah, yeah. I remember, so I used to work and write a bunch for BuzzFeed, and mm-hmm. I remember there was sort of this, like, war with Gawker and the Gawker brands.
Yeah.
In particular, there was this person who wrote this thing about Smarm. I don't know if you remember
this. Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And it was
yeah.
just like kind of critiquing BuzzFeed for being like too genuine and earnest.
Yeah.
And it was like, let people be genuine.
Yeah, I remember reading that piece and being like, I do agree with it in some ways. Like,
right.
I do think there's some very fake sort of, you know, like not to quote All About Eve this early in the morning, but, you know, the cheap sentiment. And I do think that there can be a lot of cheap sentiment. And I think it's really what is driving that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it, you know, are people doing this to monetize something? Are they doing it to get clicks? And that I can see as a problem. But when somebody is sharing their story or somebody is earnest, I you know, I feel like that isn't a weak thing.
Right.
And I get tired of people seeing that as something weak and vulnerable and something to make fun of.
Yeah. The concept of fucking your fans.
Yes, DFYF. That is very, I don't like it when people hook up with their fans. I think it's very, very improper.
Yeah.
At least when it's, I mean, and I think this is especially true about those of us who got famous when we were young.
Yeah.
You know, I would see, I shouldn't name names, but I would see like some other child actors or, you know, musicians who'd gotten famous when they were young who would be like, hey girls, give me your Skype number and I will message you. And I was like, don't do that. You're taking advantage of them. And it's not fair to you either.
Right.
So it's, you're putting you up on a pedestal. That's not fair. And you're taking advantage of their love and trust in you. And that's really not fair. So,
right.
So that's DFYF I think is a very, I guess it's different if they're a fan of you as an adult and they don't like worship you. If it's more even, you know, level, then, you know, that's okay. But otherwise, yeah, don't do that.
Good, good, good note. Anybody with a big fan base who's listening.
Yeah.
So I do want to ask, you've called yourself a recovering child star, right?
Yes, yeah.
What is your relationship with that term now? Like, has it changed?
I mean, I think that everybody knows that any child star is going to have some kinds of issues. It's just not... It's not a regular way to grow up. I think my parents never expected me to go as far as they did, and they tried their best to, you know, keep me grounded. But I do think that, like, the entitlement and the insecurity and the weirdness of having, you know, everybody know you but not really know you.
Right.
It definitely does affect you.
Yeah.
It definitely does affect you, and I can see why. Like, I really wish people wouldn't. I mean, this is another thing I can complain about, but I really wish people wouldn't dehumanize or mock the child actors that have gone through things.
Yeah.
I think that there was a time in my life where I might have been like, oh, well, at least I'm not them, which felt very, you know, I'm not like the other girls. And but I realize now I'm like, no, that very easily could have been me. If one or two variables changed, if you know, and that very easily could have been me. I feel like... the thing is also that I feel like a lot of people are just like, oh, well, of course, Hollywood is evil. Hollywood is bad. And I'm like, I think there's Hollywood, there's the media. They're two separate things, but intertwined. And there's fans. And I think that the media and fans don't understand that a lot of the ways that they treat people are not are part of the problem as well. So I think that that's something that we need to, you know, acknowledge. There's a lot of dehumanization.
Yeah, yeah. Especially now that, like...
And putting somebody up on a pedestal is a kind of dehumanization in itself, I think.
Right, right.
Nobody can deal with that for very long.
I wanted to ask about... So you had this page full of FAQs on your old blog. And I love that it seems like it came from a place of great frustration.
Yeah. I look back at it now and like, I'm like, wow, some of that stuff was kind of mean. And now I mean,
the sample questions are you Matilda? Will you be my best friend? Can you make me famous? And you wrote that like all of these things were.
Yeah, they were
that
things
verbatim came from.
They were things
mouths.
That people asked me. They were, you know, they would be like, can I do this? And I mean, maybe there was a bit more tongue in cheek, but they were all things that people had asked.
Yeah.
They were all things that people had said, you know?
Was there like a breaking point where you were like, I need to write this fucking FAQ?
I don't know. I feel like people were like, are you Matilda? And I got dragged by a lot of people for it. They were like, you know, you sound so bitchy. I got a lot of people calling me out for it. And I don't know. I thought that I was being self-deprecating, but a lot of other people were like, you know, did not see it that way. They saw it as me being mean to other people, me being cutting. And
I don't think so. I loved it.
Yeah. I'm glad you like it. I do think that I've lightened up a bit since then. I think I was very I was annoyed. I was annoyed that I had to keep answering the same questions, and they were things that seemed obvious to me.
Yeah. My favorite one that I also kind of identify with is when people say mean stuff about you on the internet, should I tell you about it?
God. Yeah. I don't, you know, there's that very like Southern saying, like, you know, I don't know. For some reason, I always imagine Blanche from Golden Girls saying it, like, what other people think of me is none of my business.
Right.
And I mean, that's true. Like, I get this all the time. And I used to get this even more so. People would be like, oh, somebody said that they thought you were ugly, but I don't think you're ugly. Or somebody said that they didn't like your writing, but I like your writing. And I would be like, why are you telling me this? So, like, that's the thing. People will tell me things and they'll be like, well, I don't think you're this. I don't think you're untalented. I don't think you're a husband. I don't think you're ugly. I don't think you're all these things. And I'm just like...
Just stick to the compliment half of
if
it.
If you're going to, If you want to compliment me, fine. I mean, sometimes compliments can be, like, a little much too, but like, if you can find a nice way to say it, you know.
Are you aware of the kind of, like, lesbian icon status of Miss Honey?
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely.
I was obviously a big fan of the movie when I was younger as a young gay boy, but
I've known a lot of young gay boys who really loved it too. I had a guy tell me once, he was like a friend of a friend, and he was British, and he was like, your movie was how my mom knew I was gay. I just related to Matilda so much. I was watching the movie all the time.
It's like, I don't think I realized like Miss Honey's lesbian status icon until much, much later.
Yeah, she's definitely a thing. I don't think I realized it until probably until college.
Yeah.
And that's when my friends started, like, you know, sending me like Matilda and Miss Honey slash fan fiction.
Oh, no.
Which bothers me because, guys, they have a parental relationship.
Yeah.
And people always ask me, they're like, did you have a crush on Miss Honey? And I'm like, no, Embeth was like a sister to me.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, I remember when I read the books, I was like, I do remember being like, oh, she seems really nice and sweet. And if I hadn't been Matilda, I probably would have. Embeth is, you know, gorgeous,
right,
and so sweet and embodied that part so well. But no, I mean, she was like a big sister to me, so I didn't. So many women will say that she was their first crush.
Well, it's funny. Yeah, because I mean, I have like a laundry list of men that I was like, oh, that's the one that did it.
Yeah,
and
I do
hadn't
too,
thought about that for like what does it for a lot of like lesbian and bi women.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think, I think I've had a lot of conversations about Princess Jasmine.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Princess Jasmine was
yeah.
You know, bi culture is not being sure whether you want to be or date both Jasmine and Aladdin.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is the problem, is you're not sure who you want to be and who you want to date, and it goes back and forth. That's something I fully believe. Maybe that's based on my own experience, but I've had similar conversations.
No, that is like the LGBT struggle.
Yeah. It's one of the struggles.
Right.
It's one of the
it's pretty low on the
struggles.
List.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And so now I want to ask about your newsletter. Tell me about it. I mean, it's like speaking of your fans. I mean, it is this kind of like direct way to reach people, like cut out all of the extra chatter on Twitter.
I've wanted for a while to be doing this because, you know, I used to keep a blog, but after I wrote my book and moved back to California last year, I was thinking, okay, I want something that's going to be keeping me steady writing, but I don't want to do blogging again because blogging was always sort of a jumping off point for me.
Mm-hmm.
I felt kind of in between, like I was writing a lot of stuff for The Toast, and The Toast shut down, mm-hmm. And I was writing, I started writing things for Elle magazine, but I wanted something also that was just for me. And I was thinking to myself, maybe I should start an email list. And that's when Substack approached me. And they told me they were working with Daniel Mallory Ortberg, who used to run The Toast, and who is a brilliant writer and one of my favorite people. He's so funny and so great. And Substack approached me, and I was like, how do you like it? And he was like, oh, they're great. You should work with them.
Yeah.
And they have been. They've been fantastic. And so people can subscribe and get, you know, a newsletter there. But there's also stuff that's available for the public to see if they read it.
Got it.
They can get stuff directly sent to their inbox to sort of be read at their leisure. But there's also a subscription service part of it, too. So people can subscribe $5 a month or $50 a year. And they can get like more exclusive content, more you know, behind the scenes kind of stuff, some weirder stories that like I just wrote one that was, I've just started it, so I just wrote one private story that was about my hometown's weird relationship with Tim Burton. Yeah, and that's it. That gets kind of gross and weird and fandomy. Yeah,
okay.
it's very fandomy in a very weird and gross kind of way. But it's a funny story, I think.
So it's all like nonfiction.
Some of it's nonfiction. Some of it's fiction. Right now, it's only been nonfiction, but I definitely have more fiction that I want to dive into.
All right.
It's called Shan't We Tell the Vicar, and that's because I've watched a lot of like British and BBC shows, mm-hmm. and I'm kind of, I don't know, I don't want to say I'm an Anglophile, but I do watch a lot of British TV. So many British shows either have absolutely ridiculous names like you know, Are You Being Served, or you know, Would I Lie to You, or just like all these they're either questions, like they're either rhetorical questions or they have nothing to do with what the actual show is about, like
right.
Peep Show or Spaced. It's like, what does that have to do? Well, I guess Peep Show is like a show look into somebody's mind, or
yeah.
Fleabag, you know?
Right.
You kind of have to, and you're like, what does this have to do with anything?
Yeah.
Or it'll be like two people's names and just two very British names. So I came up with this list of things that I would believe were actual British TV shows.
Uh-huh.
And they were things like Beamish and Quigley, and there's also a lot of great reality TV titles. So I had a Celebrity Shouldn't Be Running a Surgery, and Pippa Meets the Poors, and Up Your Arse, Alistair. So there were all of these things, and it it caught on, and I actually had like people from the BBC and British actors like retweeting it. So I and Shan't We Tell the Vicar was one of my favorite ones. And so now I try to include, I call my Substack Shan't We Tell the Vicar, and I try to include a fake BBC show title of the week.
Got it.
With all of those.
Well, I think that's our time.
Yeah.
But where can people find you and find your work?
You can find me at mara.substack.com and at Mara Wilson on Twitter.
Perfect.
I do not have a public Instagram, so stop following the person who just posts pictures of 13-year-old me.
Good. Thank you so
much.
Oh,
and Mara Wilson on Facebook also. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank
I really
you so
appreciate
much.
It.
It's been really fun.
All right, we're almost there. We're almost at the end of the show. But first, our chasers. Chasers are the good stuff that helps all the bad shit go down easy. Barry, you have a chaser this week?
I do, Matt.
What is it?
It's a little bit abstract.
Oh, God. Is it iridescent?
Yes. I tried doing this last week and we had to cut it because Matt truly did not understand the concept. But here's the thing. In the 90s, there was this trend of like things being iridescent. And it makes me really happy that it's making a comeback.
Okay. I'm glad that this weird color gives you joy.
Thank you. What about you, Matt? What's making you happy this week?
Basically, every day this week, I've been singing I Have Nothing in the shower, like for like three. I need to do at least three solid performances of I Have Nothing by Whitney Houston in my shower. And I sing along to the instrumental version. So I can't be competing with Whitney. I have to perform it myself. But nothing brings me greater joy than just belting out a true ballad in the shower with key change and everything.
Of course.
Yeah. So my chaser is I Have Nothing and my groundbreaking performances of it. And that's it. That's everything. Thanks for listening to Unhappy Hour. You can head to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Stitcher, wherever else you get podcasts. Hit that subscribe button, then rate us, review us, but only if it's nice. I don't want to read your shit. Unhappy Hour is a production of Pineapple Street Media. It's produced by Barry Finkel, Claire Tai, and me, Matt Belisai. Special thanks to Jenna Weiss-Berman, Max Linsky, Sin Pim, and Eleanor Kagan. Music by Hansdale Sue. You can bother Barry at FinkelBarryPie, and you can worship me on all the social medias at Matt Belisai. And that's it. That's everything. Thanks for listening. See you next week. Bye-bye.